from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The United States Supreme Court ended an intense term with a string of decisions on religious liberty, presidential powers, and pro-life issues. This week on Register Radio, we talk to Register contributor Andrea Picciotti-Bayer about what the High Court ruled on these cases so closely watched by many Catholics. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. I'm joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen. Hi, Matthew.
Hello. Always good to be with you.
It's been very busy in Washington, D.C. in the last couple of weeks. I had a break last week, which you so gratefully filled in, and we have been bombarded with decisions.
We've looked at decisions relating to religious liberty involving, once again, the Little Sisters of the Poor. We have questions about whether or not anti-Catholic prohibition against public funds for religious and private schools would be allowed to continue. And negatively, obviously, we've got the law that was struck down that calls for sensible regulations on abortionists, and it became unlawful for an employer to fire an individual for being gay or transgender, opening the door to a tsunami of lawsuits. So you're absolutely right. D.C. has been very busy, and the High Court especially so.
Yes. I mean, it's been a little bit head spinning for a lay person like me, who's not a lawyer, who doesn't have this experience reading these things. So I'm really grateful that we have friends and contributors that can make sense of this term. And here joining us now to talk about this very intense term, we're joined by EWTN News and Register contributor, also a legal analyst, Andrea Picciotti-Bayer. Andrea has written several analyses of the High Court's decision over the last few months. She's been turning them around so quickly for the Register that we're just absolutely delighted. So, Andrea, welcome to Register Radio.
Well, thank you guys for having me on. It's a great honor.
So let's start with this very big picture. I mean, the court was under intense pressure this term because it had to hear so many cases and make decisions in a very unusual way due to COVID. And then all of the cases just, I mean, it's always like this in June and July, but it just seems particularly intense right now. What is your assessment of this term?
Well, Jeanette, you're right. It is intense. And the best way to describe it is this has been a wowza term for the Supreme Court. And the number of cases that are of concern for Catholics and for all Americans. You know, you mentioned four or five of them that trigger a lot of interest. And I think that just that my printer has been definitely tired out by printing out all of these opinions and reading them, the multiple opinions that come out with each of these decisions. There are some great things that have happened and some not so great things that have happened this term at the court.
So where should we start? Let's start with, I guess, with the best of the court's decisions in the past term. What would you say are the highlights, the things we should really call a victory for Christians, for Catholics, for the country, really?
You know, my favorite this term has been a case involving school choice. And the reason why it's my favorite is the court was finally able to give, I think, a deadly blow to a terrible anti-Catholic provision that's found in state constitutions across the country. And those are called the State Blaine Amendments. Mm-hmm. And these are amendments that were enacted in the late 1800s, and they were basically geared to prevent the flow of public funds from going to Catholic schools. Since then, these laws have morphed into blocking public aid to all kinds of religious schools, and that's what was going on in Montana. The Montana legislature passed a program to give tax incentive credits to people who donated to private scholarship funds to private schools, and the state tax agency said that those scholarship funds, in order to get a tax credit, couldn't go to religiously affiliated schools. Fortunately, the plaintiffs, three wonderful single moms out of Montana, fought their way all the way to the Supreme Court, and they won. And this is, you know, it was an incredible decision by the court, and I think Chief Justice John Roberts did a very good thing this term in the Espinosa case. And we really see the insight, especially of some of the Catholic justices on the bench, on their concern for wiping away this horrible stain on our country's history.
Right. So this case is called Espinosa versus Montana. Of course, you wrote a piece for the Register at ncregister.com that's called Espinosa versus Montana is a Victory for Religious Freedom. And it's you mentioned the Blaine Amendments, and, you know, there are, what, I've heard 37, 35 states that have some form of these amendments like Montana had. Is this ruling likely to affect those other Blaine Amendments?
Well, we sure do hope so. When a case gets to the Supreme Court, you really hope that it becomes a standard for how governments at the federal government level or state governments will order their behavior, especially with regard to constitutional rights. And this case was decided based on the First Amendment of the Constitution, the Free Exercise Clause. Now, each case in each state has a unique law, and oftentimes state lawmakers come up with their own unique program to try to encourage school choice. But I think that anyone at the state level that's got a good sense about them is going to take very seriously the court's admonition and not block the flow of funds or even incentive programs like Montana's from stopping parents from choosing the best school for their kids.
So there was also another case this term, and it was decided, I think, July 8th, so just this week, that involved Catholic schools. It's Our Lady of Guadalupe School. What did this case, what was the ruling on this case, and how does it affect us Catholics?
You know, and it's really hard. That comes in a close second.
For your favorite case.
It's really hard. I mean, they were, which one do I like more? Our Lady of Guadalupe and St. James School are two consolidated cases coming out of the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. And the court decided just this past week that there is a provision in the, you know, built into the First Amendment and the history of the First Amendment is a provision that protects churches and church schools from having the government second-guess their hiring and firing decisions. Now, that provision is known shorthand as the ministerial exception. And it basically says that when a church is making a decision on hiring their pastor or firing their pastor, that the federal government or a state government can't come in and question, even if the person that was hired or fired wasn't hired or was fired, says that they were discriminated against. Now, this case involved two religious school teachers at parochial schools. They were fifth grade teachers, both of them, and they claimed that they weren't rehired for the next school year in violation of federal employment law, one claiming that she was discriminated against based on disability and the other based on her age. And the court said these teachers were covered under the ministerial exception. Their positions were. And what was very important about the decision written by incredible Catholics was that the functions of the employee matter. And that's a really important perspective, especially when we're talking about Catholic schools, where most of our Catholic schools have teachers that are lay people. They're not, you know, Father Joe or Sister Ellen, but instead, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Stone or Burke. And so not looking at the titles or even the specific training, but looking at those factors and most importantly, the functions where they asked to guide the future generation in the faith.
So, you know, you point out, you know, obviously they're looking at their function at the school, their teachers that are passing on the faith. As you know, we had another writer, Helen Alvarez, write at the Register the same day you did on this case. She wrote something called Supreme Court Delivers Two Important Victories for Religious Freedom, and this was on July 8th. She makes a point that this case is not only a win for those who have that function of passing on the faith very specifically as religion teachers, but this is likely to apply to other kinds of teachers that maybe are teaching math or other types of administrators, employees even at other Catholic institutions, not necessarily just education. Do you also see this applying broader than just a Catholic school, a religion teacher?
You know, I think first there's a practical aspect. In general, in our elementary schools, our teachers wear many different hats. And so they're going to be wearing the math teacher hat as well as preparing kids for First Communion, bringing kids to daily mass or all school mass. And so in kind of getting down to brass tacks, in practicality, most Catholic school teachers at the parochial elementary level do qualify under this ministerial exception. And the court does specifically speak on that uniqueness. I think it was Justice Alito did on the uniqueness of, at the elementary level. I think, first, I would never contradict Helen Alvarez. Never.
Neither would I.
I think she's one of the... She's one of the most brilliant minds out there and an incredible, faithful Catholic woman. I think what she's saying is this should, this is going to be an issue. And we'll talk about the intersection of Our Lady of Guadalupe with another case that the Supreme Court decided this term and why Helen's optimism over the ministerial exception being covering all employees might really be needed at this time.
And we're continuing our conversation with the EWTN News and Register contributor and legal analyst, Andrea Picciotti-Bear. Andrea, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about relating to this very case, and I want to read something that you wrote, that you talk about the founders familiar with life under the established Church of England opposed the creation of a national church, forbidding the establishment of religion and guaranteeing the free exercise thereof, guarded against the federal government playing a role in filling ecclesiastical offices. So in other words, we're talking about the free exercise clause. Can you help everyone understand how this really is an important principle, but also how it's a practical application of our protections under the Constitution?
Well, absolutely, Matthew. You make a really good point. It is the free exercise clause, but also the establishment clause. And that says you know, that in the Constitution that the government cannot establish a church either. Now, when the government is in the business of either choosing who is going to be in ecclesiastical positions or questioning the choice of churches, then they really will have a role in shaping what the church would be and endorsing what the church is. What we as Americans have in this great, beautiful project that we have is kind of a hands-off approach. Our government offers such wonderful supports, but when it comes to faith, this is a freedom that each one of us holds uniquely and that our churches are going to be freed from government interference. The ministerial exception is kind of a perfect encapsulation of those two clauses working hand in hand.
Andrea, I'm going to turn to the not so good parts of this term. You did kind of, I know, who wants to think about that?
Sorry.
You did just mention that the Guadalupe case really also needed to kind of be taken in light of another case, and that case was more negatively decided. It's the Bostock case, as we've been calling it for short. What happened in that case? How does it relate to the Guadalupe case and this the whole idea of a, I guess, a ministerial exception? It's all complicated, and again, this is where my my lay ability to understand this needs to be helped by a legal analyst like yourself. So, what does Bostock mean for us?
Well, I really hope that I can give some clarity. I think that even the legal community is still in shock after Bostock came down. And for listeners who may not be entirely familiar with the case, this involved three consolidated cases. Two where plaintiffs claimed that they were fired from their positions because of their sexual orientation. A third claiming that he was fired because he wanted to identify as a woman. The Supreme Court, in a very disappointing and shocking and surprising decision, said that the federal employment discrimination law, called shorthand for Title VII, included sexual orientation and gender identity under the rubric of what's called sex discrimination. Now, sex discrimination is specifically written in Title VII. There are a number of bases in which you cannot discriminate against a person based on in employment, and sex is one of them. In the Bostic case, the decision was written, unfortunately, by someone that we had a lot greater hopes for, and I think we can continue to hope for his recovery, by Justice Neil Gorsuch. And he concluded that if you discriminate against someone based on their sexual orientation or on their gender identity, you necessarily have to refer to their sex. And that's how he kind of got down the logical slippery slope of concluding that the law covered sexual orientation and gender identity. This is a big problem. It's a problem based on the kind of sloppiness of the legal reasoning, especially using a method of interpreting statutes that should be a lot cleaner and a lot clearer. But it's also a problem because it exposes people who have a sincerely held religious opposition to sexual orientation manipulation and gender identity, as far as recognizing the unique identity of the human person as God creates us, male and female, made for one another and not for having human sexual relationships that are different from that. How it ties in to Our Lady of Guadalupe, well, we know that the ministerial exception basically says for our schools and other church-run organizations, when it comes to people whose functions include imparting the faith, that these claims cannot be brought. It's basically what we call in the legal community an affirmative defense for the school. And that's one step. I think there's in the Bostic decision written by Justice Gorsuch, he speaks about a number of other matters and protections where faith-based opposition to same-sex marriage or to gender identity will be safeguarded. And some of those will be future cases to come, whether, for example, the Federal Religious Freedom and Restoration Act provides a defense for employers and other First Amendment defenses. But at least we know, you know, as the court was winding up its 2019-2020 term, the ministerial exception does give a little bit of clarity when it comes to Catholic schools not being forced to hire trans applicants to teach in parochial schools.
You know, Andrea, I keep thinking as you're talking about these details, and it's the Supreme Court's job really to rule as kind of as narrowly as possible, it seems. They're talking about particular cases. They rule on these particular cases. And that's how we can see such different decisions as Bostock and Guadalupe touching on very, very similar themes, but they're very different kind of decisions. I guess I say that because sometimes I think there's a tendency to put a lot of faith in the justices to kind of settle some of these so-called culture wars. And it's not really their job. Anyway, that's, I just kind of put that out there. How do you respond to that idea?
No, I think you're absolutely right. First, we know where we put our faith. We put our faith in a God that loves and cares and wants for our good. We do know that, in my personal opinion, I'm sure you both would agree, our system of government is a wonderful system of government, and the independent judiciary, separate and apart from the executive and from the legislative, is really a wonderful and successful experiment, the American experiment. But when you talked about the narrow holdings, I want to, you know, before we let it slip by, one of my other favorite cases of the term was a victory for the Little Sisters of the Poor in fighting the Affordable Care Act's, what the court has called a contraceptive mandate. And the decision of the court was based on very narrow grounds. The case will return to the lower courts, but the court, I almost think of it as a parent chastising an unruly child. The court was saying, come on, get it right. Federal government and state governments that don't seem to accept it recognize that religious freedom is something that needs to be safeguarded whenever any kind of law is passed. And so, you know, whether the decision could have been ruled broader, and I know our dear friend Helen Alvarez laments along with me that it wasn't ruled, decided on more broad grounds, it was decided in a way that respects the authority of Congress, respects the authority of the executive, and keeps the judiciary and the Supreme Court in its proper lane. They aren't legislating from the bench. Their job is to face a case and a controversy before them, using the laws that they are asked or the Constitution asked to uphold, and giving us a way moving forward, hopefully, so that these culture wars don't render victims any more than they already are, and beautiful nuns like the Little Sisters of the Poor won't continue to be persecuted.
Yes, I know Matthew has another follow-up question for you, but I would just say, you know, our publisher, Michael Warsaw, wrote a note, his publisher's note in the last issue, on put your faith not in justices, and that is because there were some disappointments, and I think sometimes we do have that tendency to, you know, just expect them to rule more broadly, and that doesn't always happen, and nor should it, because we have to respect those other the government the way it's been constructed. I mean, it is a beautiful country, and we have these balances that we need to respect, but also it's our part, right? I mean, we have to hold our elected officials to account too. And the Supreme Court's not elected, you know? And so we've got a job to do to keep, faith alive and to keep, the common good before, the American people always. And so it really falls on us, to do our part. Matthew, I know you had a follow-up question, so please, jump in here.
Well, it really relates to the question of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. It's been mentioned now in a number of opinions, and it was looming very large, it seemed to me, in the decision on the Little Sisters of the Poor. And I guess my question for you would be, look, going forward in some of these cases, especially since we may see efforts again to bring about the contraceptive mandate, are there going to be lawsuits likely stemming from Bostock? How important is it that RFRA be given an even more solid legal foundation, and do you see the high court really leaning on it?
You know, you never know what's going to be presented before the court until they have the cases before them. I think that RFRA is going to be something that the court is going to have to consider and apply. I think I'd mentioned that Justice Alito, in his concurring opinion, in the Little Sisters of the Poor case, mentioned that he really felt that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act demanded that the federal government create an exemption for religious groups like the Little Sisters. The court didn't have to decide on that issue, but he laid it out pretty clearly. But we're always going to go back as well to the Constitution, and I just wanted to highlight this coming term in October. One of my most favorite cases is going to be heard, oral arguments going to be heard by the Supreme Court. It's a case that all Catholics should be informed about and be praying for. It involves the foster care program run by the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. The case is Fulton versus City of Philadelphia, and it has to deal with the city pulling the foster care contract of the Archdiocese after the Archdiocese refused to certify same-sex married couples to be foster parents. Now, no foster parent, same-sex couple had ever approached the agency, but the agency said, as consistent with Catholic teaching, we cannot endorse a marriage that goes contrary to Catholic teaching on marriage as being between a man and a woman. This is going to be a very interesting case. It's tied into the First Amendment. It's about free exercise rights. It has a chance for the court to actually reconsider a prior precedent involving neutral laws and how they impact religious believers. And I think it's going to be really important, especially now that we see that foster care kids, not only are they always needing a loving home, but more and more kids as a result of the pandemic are being put into foster care. And so this is where Catholics, just like you said, Jeanette, we lead by our example of love.
Absolutely.
And we lead oftentimes in foster care and adoption. And so hopefully the court is going to direct these cities not to close doors of these faith-based agencies, but keep them open so that more kids can find loving homes.
Absolutely. Thanks for bringing that up, Andrea, because that is a very important case. The registers followed it up till now, and we do have to look forward to it. You know, it just reminds me that in two of these cases, Guadalupe and the Little Sisters, the majority opinion actually got to say how important Catholic contributions were. They really acclaimed Catholic schools, and they acclaimed the Little Sisters and their 150 years of work. So that was pretty awesome to see in court documents.
Yeah.
So we're all out of time, but I mean, this show has just flown by, and I want to just thank you, Andrea, for all of the work that you've done for EWTN News and the Register and contributing these wonderful analysis and for this show.
Well, thanks for having me on, and I hope to be able to serve.
So you can find the work of Andrea Picciotti-Bayer at ncregister.com, along with a lot of other news and analysis and features and commentary. So check out the Register at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
In these uncertain times, Catholics depend on EWTN's National Catholic Register. The Register is so much more than a newspaper. It's your faith, your life, your source of information and spiritual resources. The Register is uplifting, redemptive journalism, interviews with Catholic leaders and newsmakers, liturgical coverage, health, financial, and political topics, and analysis of the key issues you care most about. EWTN's National Catholic Register covers every aspect of the Catholic faith that impacts your world. To get 6 free issues, order online at ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code radio. That's ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code radio. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.